and welcome to episode 33 of Role, Play, Grow, the podcast for tabletop entrepreneurs, creators, and fans. I am Courtney Stover of Lightheart Adventures, and in this podcast, we talk to the creators behind the brands and the tabletop role-play gaming space about who they are and how they are turning their passion for gaming into a career. Chris Valentine is a best-selling TTRPG author who publishes on both DM's Guild and DriveThruRPG. One of the things I find most impressive about Chris is the wildly efficient process he's developed for producing new supplements and adventures on a super fast timeline. We are talking a new publication every week and a half, while he also works full-time and has a newborn baby. Now, I will absolutely say that I do not want to in any way encourage something that could cause burnout for you personally, and I certainly don't want any of you to hear this and feel as though you aren't doing enough. You absolutely are. Instead, what I hope you're able to gather from this discussion is ideas on how to make your own development processes more efficient so that they are serving you well. Chris has great advice on how having lists of every step can help you when you're feeling stuck so that you know what else you can focus on that will still help you reach your goals. Again, I found this deep dive to be really fascinating, and I hope that it helps you too. For our business update, Britton is still continuing to churn out maps for Wild Beyond the Witchlight. He is creating a separate map pack for every chapter and expects to total around 60 to 80 maps by the time he completes all five chapters. As I explained in an earlier episode, these packs are being released in black and white at first, featuring all sorts of locations across the adventure. Once he completes the fifth pack, he'll be updating them with a full color version as well. The prices will increase once both versions are available, so if you're planning on running Wild Beyond the Witchlight anytime soon, I highly suggest snagging these packs as they come out, and once the color version is added to the listing, you'll get the new version for free. You can snag these by either going to DM's Guild and searching for Lightheart Adventures as the author, or by going to lightheartadventures.com/shop to find all our DM's Guild and DriveThruRPG publications in one spot. Some other ways you can support us and this show are by subscribing to the show and leaving a review. Reviews help me reach more people, and if you leave it on Apple Podcasts, your review might even get featured on an upcoming episode. Lastly, you can help support the show by checking out our affiliates, like the creator behind some of our favorite dice, Dice Envy. They offer gorgeous dice in a variety of materials, including wood, metal, stone, and resin. Go to diceenvy.com and enter code LIGHTHEART8DV to get 10% off your order, get some snazzy dice, and help me keep this show running. All right, let's go meet Chris. Today, I am chatting with TTRPG bestselling author and cartographer, Chris Valentine. Hello, Chris. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I'm excited to dive into all of your different projects that you've got going on.
Fantastic. I'm excited to be here.
Well, perfect. Well, let's go ahead and kick things off. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into gaming?
I'm 46. I got into gaming when I was 12 years old. Kids on the schoolyard brought in the old red box set. We played a little bit between classes, and then this was something that wasn't cool to my father. So maybe like a year of that happened and pretty much stopped playing, but I never stopped reading. I used to buy the books just to read the lore, to read the monster manuals and stuff. And it wasn't until maybe 5 years ago, we went to Comic-Con here in Phoenix. And they had a game demo area, and they had a Pathfinder situation where we could make quick players. So me and my wife did that. And honestly, that didn't go too well. I don't think it was Pathfinder. I think it was their setup they had or their onboarding situation. Didn't really clue us into what we needed to do. But the following year, we still had interest in it, and we thought we would just try something else. And then they had a D&D 5e area. I think that was Adventurers League, and we made some characters there, and that time went much better. As soon as we left the convention, we immediately researched game stores in town that had their own Adventurers League or their own games, and we sat in as many as we could and settled on one or two that we like. And for the next year or two, we played like two games a week because there was a pretty big scene for store-centered games around here. As that happened, all the memories of me reading it, you know, when I was little, reading Dragonlance books, reading fantasy books kind of came flooding back. and all the old ideas I had at those times kind of came back, and I wanted to be able to solidify those into something real and share them with people. So there was a class. It was called RPG Writer Workshop at the time, which I believe they've changed their name now. And it was just $30 to teach you how to write an adventure and submit it for publication. I did that, turned it in. Few people bought it, then a few people more. And after that point, I had the general philosophy and technique down to be able to continue doing it. And I just started one after another trying to pin some of those ideas I had down and get them out there and see if, you know, somebody would like them or somebody would purchase them. And they have been. And I've been just kind of doing more and more since then. And I have a real bad problem with making a mountain out of a molehill type of a situation. Is I have a small story that I think is maybe a 20-page supplement, and it ends up being a 75-page thing because I can't stop putting into it. But that's about it. That kind of takes me to now, as I think I have a dozen different things out, got a couple dozen more in the works. I've won a few awards. I got a few bestseller medals. I'm starting to get some kind of guest spots on different things. So, I mean, for me, it's turning around. And traditionally, I guess I should mention that I'm not a writer. Not by trade. I'm a 20-year application developer. I've been working at the same place for 2 decades. I actually own it now. But if anybody ever needs a lesson on burnout, I can definitely instruct that or draw some good pictures.
Yeah. Are you currently playing in any campaigns right now?
Yes. Every other Monday, we have a Rime of the Frostmaiden campaign on Roll 20. But again, I have a new baby recently, and that has kind of had me cancel some games. So that game's kind of been on a hiatus for a little bit. In addition to that, we used to play every Tuesday a Deadlands game for Savage Worlds, which I really like Savage Worlds. It might be my favorite system now. We also played a Savage Rifts game, again using Savage Worlds. And on Saturdays, I DM a Salt Marsh game with a lot of my own custom content that's on DM's Guild.
Wow, that is a lot going on, but that's awesome. Well, I definitely want to dive into a lot of what you talked about with your story. So for starters, when did you take that writing RPG course?
I believe that was summer of 2019.
Okay, wow. That is impressive because you have a lot of different publications that are out on DM's Guild and DriveThruRPG now.
Yeah, sorry. There actually was about a year hiatus I took during this pandemic just dealing with it. So even though it's been a couple years, it really has only been 1 year of me actively working it. I should point that out.
That is even more impressive. And I definitely want to dive into that. But just to give our listeners some context, can you give a bit of an overview about what all of the different types of things you're publishing are?
Sure. I publish primarily adventures. At first, when I started to do it, my intention was to do them to be able to be used during Adventure League games and conventions that Wizards of the Coast would, they don't necessarily sponsor, but they help get going. They had this program called the CCC program, which is a community created content. And that's primarily what I wanted to do when I started. That program has since been dissolved. It's been changed to something else called Dungeon Craft, but it's not as lenient with what you can write. You have to write very specific story seeds with very specific rewards. So I started my first one, was called Hidden Cove, and that was supposed to be eventually released at a convention, which never happened just because of the way that system kept changing. After that, I moved on to this other one that I actually had written previously, but before the class, as more of my notes, was called Lost in Shadow, which is the same general locations as the D&D starter set that happens in Phandalin or the Tribor area. It's called Lost Mine of Phandalin. And I take all those locations and I go to their Shadowfell equivalent. And so you'll see the maps are the same, the terrain looks the same roughly, but there's different people inhabiting them. Different creatures, places that you were familiar with are now in ruins, places that were ruins are now fully restored, some new places, some places missing. That one has been a pretty big hit, and that was a full tier one campaign, so it's a pretty big adventure. After that, I've got an adventure that takes you from Saltmarsh to Baldur's Gate for the book that came out, Descent into Avernus. I thought that maybe that would help some people who were playing the last publication, Ghosts of Saltmarsh, and then the new publication came out, and this would give their characters a route to go from one area to another. The stuff I've been doing lately is all Saltmarsh related, just because when I'm not writing, I DM at conventions. And I've DM'd the Ghosts of Saltmarsh several times. I was even given the book by Wizards of the Coast for DMing it. So it happens to be something I was super familiar with. And if anybody is familiar with that book, there's several level gaps in it that aren't supplied to help the characters get from 5 to 7. Then there's like big gap between 7 and 9 and another big gap between 9 and 11. So I created adventures to fill in those gaps that kind of help take that area and the characters in that area and tie them together into a more cohesive arcing story, because that's lacking in the publication itself. And I've just finished the third in that trilogy called Pinnacle of Power, which actually goes to the Underdark beneath Saltmarsh, and it gets to some kind of neat areas that haven't been explored in the book. Other than that, adventures, I also have a bunch of boat schematics. Again, Saltmarsh introduced the ship combat and ship rules, but they had a limited amount of ships, so most of my adventures actually include a couple ships just to kind of get the big collection going. I have some subclasses that are getting ready to come out, but they're not out yet. I have a divination system that uses 2d8 to kind of give you a tarot-type reading. It's kind of neat. Some people have had some neat stories from that. And my big one from last year is called Wicker Jack, and it's a Halloween adventure. It takes place in a town called Cherrywood, and it is full of just the typical classic horror tropes like Frankenstein, vampire, werewolf. It all happens in this town. And the idea was, if you get this adventure, you could use it every year and just visit a different part of the town, so you'd be taken care of for Halloween for year after year. And then I have another one that is a supplement about Death Knights. It's all different variants of Death Knights, different lore, different weapons, different layers. And those can be mix and matched to help create your own, you know, sinister evil lord. And that works really well with the Ravenloft Domains of Dreads. If you're trying to create your own Dark Lord, this gives you all the materials you would need to just kind of throw them together how you want, and then you see what you get.
That is such a big variety of items. And I was just counting, and it looks like you've got, I think, about 30 different publications on DM's Guild alone, not including DriveThruRPG.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even mention I have a lot of free stuff that I just put out there. So I guess, yeah, that probably does take that number up quite a bit.
Well, yeah, I would love to dive into, I guess, just some of your processes. So walk me through from idea conception and how you decide what you want to work on next, and then just what that process is getting it into publication.
Okay, sure. So I for years was not a fan of Microsoft products. Not at all. I would do everything I could to avoid paying money for a piece of software. I would get the free version. And that's kind of a trait that I possess throughout my life, is I'm always trying to go for the underdog, even though they're constantly losing, and I still continue to do it. Something happened around the time when I took that class, and I finally tried Microsoft OneNote, which is not free. I mean, it is free, but to use all the full features, you need to pay $7 a month, which I happily do now. But it's a great organization tool. So if we're talking about how I organize, this tool is the center of it all. I have different little projects within it that I can add to or take away from or move around or kind of add some. You can drag images in it, free text to do check boxes and bullet lists. So I do all that in here. So I get a new idea. I'm probably outside in my hammock trying to sleep or rest, or I'm in the car, you know, confined space, and I'm just pondering over whatever. And I use my phone. I put my idea in my OneNote, has like an idea bin, whatever I've come up with. And that happens several times per day, many times per week. And if you've ever heard writers or filmmakers or anybody talk about having a notebook on you and quickly recording something before you forget. This is my equivalent of that, is it takes just a few seconds to record it. So I gather those all into a potential projects folder in OneNote. And then I look through it when I'm getting ready to make something. I kind of go through and see what has potential. You know, some things are just bits that maybe they'll be part of something, and some other things are full, you know, full-fledged ideas. So I sift through that and I find what I think has the most potential. The thing that I'm working on that I have not perfected yet is, and this is more of the business aspect of writing for RPGs, is I'm not really good yet at seeing what the public wants right now in the current atmosphere or the meta or whatever the terminology you want to use. I usually write what I want to write for myself. So at some point, what part of my decision process will see what's the best thing to come out, you know, in the next couple months. Like right now, the Wild Beyond the Witchlight book is coming out in a few days. So Feywild, this and that is everywhere. If you see the different sites, they're all trying to keep it to the Feywild or fairies and that kind of thing. I, of course, am writing Underdark stuff right now because I'm not doing that. So I go through that list. I look at what has potential, and I create a new project out of whatever idea I have. I create a couple standard folders for it. I create a checklist of the things that I need to do. I have like a default checklist I just kind of copy in there, and it tells me every step that I need to make. So I'm trying to make my process as repeatable and iterative as I can. So after I got the idea, I create a mood board. And the mood board is just pictures I find on Google Images or wherever. I just drag them in. If they look like I feel that adventure should look, I throw them in there. If I can find a picture of a person who looks like the person in the adventure, I throw that in there until I have like a big kind of a vision board looking thing that gives me the right aesthetic and feel for it, to kind of put my mind in the right spot. After that, I start brainstorming ideas. I don't use mind maps. Some people do. I use bulleted lists. I like them better. I can always make a new subsection so the hierarchy stays the same. That's my thing. So I make a big brainstorm bulleted list of all these different ideas that are offshoots of the main idea. Oh, there could be a cave. Oh, maybe there's a centaur. Oh, this would be a nice magic item to have in this type of a scene. And I do that until I'm exhausted. And the idea here is not quality. It's just quantity. Anything I can squeeze out of my brain sponge and have it on paper is better because it leaves my mind free to think of other things. So after I've gotten that all down, I take that brainstorm list. I probably sleep. I should mention that. You got to have good time to recover. So this would be like another day. And then I create a general outline of what I think this story is going to be. A rough outline. Where it starts, where it ends, things in the middle, important people or places that I'll go to. And I record all that on this bulleted list, and I move stuff around and kind of get it where I think it's going to be. After that, I like names, so I start looking up names for NPCs. I like to go to the name generators, and I rarely ever use what a name generator gives me. I just kind of use that to get me thinking in certain directions, and I usually come up with them myself. I do that for the NPCs, for the villains, anybody else that needs to have names in there. Then I got the scenes. I try to take them. The bulleted list of the outline and come up with different scenes, different places the characters will visit, and encapsulate sections of that bulleted list into scenes. So those could have items, those could have NPCs, those could have a certain location like a castle map or something. But I try to create the different scenes and see what's going to be in each one. And then I again, from that brainstorming, I think about any unique encounters that may happen here, or maybe there's a trap I wanted to use, or there is a hard choice players will have to make where they can choose, you know, left or right, but not both. And each choice will make some other outcome impossible. So, I mean, they have to really think about where they want things to go. I'll try to put those into different scenes and then kind of get that flow all working together. After that, I've got like a rough outline now. I start creating the characters, the personalities, I should say, of the NPCs. What's their flaw? What's their bond? What do they look like? What do they act like? A little bit about where they came from, because I, you know, kind of will infuse their decisions with certain predispositions. And I do that for the NPCs, and I do that for the villains. And I have all those out in a separate little tab on my projects thing. Then I start thinking about sort of minions for the villains, or creatures that will help move the story along. Sometimes they're bad, sometimes they're not. Sometimes I purposely present something as its combat when really that's not the easiest option. It's just sometimes I mess with the murder hobo aspect and see who can get through those. Come up with more details on the magic items, sometimes the function, the mechanics behind them, some of the history. I really like history in items. Some people just put a +5 sword in there or something and they expect that to make it the coolest thing. But to me, a sword that has no mechanical bonus but has a long history of slaying kings or defeating vampires or whatever makes it for a more interesting item. So I try to come up with those little stories when I can and put those in. And then sometimes at this point, I've created NPCs, villains, items, scenes, locations. Sometimes now I've decided that I made too much or something really doesn't fit in. I was trying to force it. And I'll cut all those out and I'll put them in another project folder I have of stuff that I've partially created but didn't end up using. So maybe I can use it in the future. Therefore, that effort is not wasted. At this point, I actually create the maps. I often get like writer's block or whatever we want to call it. And it helps me to stop writing for a while and just use some kind of art software or map making software and just draw out what I'm visualizing so that I can see it concretely and to give me a break from writing. And I use predominantly Dungeon Draft and Wonder Draft. These are cheap programs and they have a nice consistent art feel. So I use those. I go in there, I create the geographical region maps. I create the location maps. Often lately I've been creating ship maps. I get all that done, and this really helps me when I'm describing a room. In the next step, I'll be able to see how big it really is. Is it 20 by 20? Is it 15 by 30? I'll know all that having had the maps completed. So after that's done, now I try to write out as much as I can in bulk. Usually I start with location descriptions because they're nice, concise, and easy to do. Such as, you know, you come up to a 20-foot door, it's 10 feet wide, it's made of mahogany. You know, it's very factual. I don't have to think as much, and it'll kind of get my writing gears going and warmed up. So I do all the location descriptions, and then once those are done, I actually start the real writing of it, which I often remind myself as I'm talking to the DM when I write these things. As I'm trying to relay what's in my head to this DM. Now, they can, of course, use it however they want, but I want at least them to understand my intention, and then they can tweak it from there. So I write the intro, the background of the adventure, the history of the NPCs, why we're going to the Green Dragon Inn, who they should expect to find there, what quest they will be given, point out some places they can go from here to look for clues or look for the person or look for the item. And I write all that down. And this is probably the longest part of this as I try to put the bulk of all this writing in through all these scenes, through the maps, all the way to the very end with the conclusion and, you know, thanks. I hope it was good. The players all did this, a little summary. And after that, I would call that like the principal writing. I have all that done. So after that, I just keep reading it, reread it 1, 2, 3, 10 times, making sure things are as concise as they can be. If I had grammatical or spelling errors, if I want to reword something, or maybe at the beginning now that the end has been written, I realize that something needs to change to be in continuity with the ending, I change it now. And I do that several times, and then I think this is good enough, and I have somebody else read it and edit it for me. Or often I attempt to do the editing if I'm trying to keep it on the cheap. After that, if it is a really nice, large supplement, I use a professional layout software. I use Affinity Publisher. Others use InDesign and Scribus and other things. I like Publisher because it was inexpensive and high quality, but I only use that if it's a large publication. If it is just a small one-shot, I would use a Word template that I think looks, you know, 89% as good as the high-quality stuff, but it's a lot less work. So between one of those two, I start doing the layout, adding little images I can, some clip art or stock photos or my daughter is an artist, so I often commission her through various payments, bribes, or suggestions to give me a couple good art pieces per publication, and she's really good at it. So once it's all laid out, I design the cover if I haven't already. Often when I need a break, I'll design the cover somewhere else in the middle of this. again, just to give a break from writing. And once that is done, I export it to a suitable size and quality PDF file and upload it and put the marketing blurb on it. When you submit to sites, you often have to categorize it and tell the number of pages, and I do all that stuff. And then you would think at this point you're done. But no, as I've learned, when you've written it, you've only done a little portion. Now you have to market it. And this part has been difficult for me to acquire since I am not a natural marketing person. So I take all of the stuff that I've just created and I create promo images and excerpts and, you know, whatever I think I can use to just kind of show people a glimpse of it. I mean, without giving too much away, but I mean, not that there's really a danger of that. But I create all that marketing stuff, and I have like some Photoshop templates I use to make it fast. And then I go out to, there's like different Discord groups you have to go to. There's different social medias. There are Reddit forums, people, reviewers. You can get them a copy and they'll, you know, look at it, write a review up, which will generate buzz or at least make people aware. So I do all that, and that takes probably longer than it takes to write an adventure. And once I'm kind of, I think I've carried that out as far as I can, I go back to that project bucket and start again.
That is amazing. And there's so much work that goes into this.
Yeah, I'm very happy that I've gotten to kind of wrap my brain around the process.
So it's really amazing that you're able to commission your daughter to help with the artwork as well. I'm curious, how do you decide, you know, whether you're able to commission it or you're looking for those stock photos and things? How do you decide what artwork you want to include and what the cover should look like?
For the cover, I try to either build it myself. I can work with art programs as long as they don't require proportions. So I can't draw people or animals yet. I've been practicing, maybe in the future. But I can do text, typefacing, borders. So if I can figure out a way to make the cover on the cheap, just using my own skills, and maybe a Pixabay is a site that has really nice stock photos. If I happen to see one that I think, you know, mostly represents it, I put that in there. I decorate it with myself after that in Photoshop or whatever, and that's going to be good. Now, with DM's Guild and even DriveThruRPG, there's some places that have just stock art that is fantasy specific, and those make for way better covers. Usually you have to purchase them, though. That's the problem. I try to keep my expenses low since I'm not generating a ton of revenue right now. So after you get those, and you can put those up, if it's a fantasy-related one, the covers will look just far superior. I think people know that you're trying to use stock photos when you're using them, so it's not like you can get around that. But the real decision here is the payoff. If I'm going to pay for art, I need to know that I believe this publication is going to generate enough to cover it. Otherwise, I'm just not going to make the ends meet from, you know, one side to the other. I have yet to commission anybody other than my daughter. I wish I had an exami. Obviously, this is audio, but her quality is very good. It's like I have a real, genuine professional artist living here. And that has been amazing for me. I appreciate it. If she hears this, I appreciate you. She's just really good at it. And I can often give her percentages off of what I make as well. She has, you know, accounts on DM's Guild and stuff, and I can give her 5%, 10%, whatever. And she's usually good with that. And it covers her RPG book expenses for her, so everybody wins. I keep trying to get her to actually advertise her ability because I really think she would get a lot of hits. I mean, it's really good quality stuff. I do have some stuff coming up that is going to be bigger than I've done before now that I've got some experience behind me. And those things I will be getting commissioned art for from actual outside parties. And I'm going to guess right now, even though I haven't done it specifically yet, it's going to be for the cover and it's going to be for the chapter headings with the kind of the background picture. Those are going to be what I'm going to put the money behind.
Cool. Are you able to talk about what those projects are?
Sure. The one adventure I said has done quite well is called Lost in Shadow. And that is the Lost Mine of Phandelver locations that are in the Shadowfell. The sequel to that is called Primordial Mine, and that is the same concept, except for it's not the Shadowfell this time. It's those same locations in the Feywild. It's much bigger. The first one was a tier one adventure, so it covers levels 1 through 5. This next one will go from 5 till 10. Feywild is all the hype right now, so it should be coming. And it'll be a little bit late after that book, but you know, the Feywild buzz should still be high. The cover for that is something I want to get done. And the Feywild is far different than the Shadowfell. It's very desaturated and gray and foggy. And I don't think it would have really led to a great cover anyway. But Feywild is oversaturated and bright and colorful and whimsical. And I think this is something that will be a lot easier to bring out. And covers really can capture the eye. I mean, if you're looking through a series of little sliders and all the different book titles, I mean, people are very visual. So if something can pull somebody's eye down to the little icon and get them to click on it, it's definitely worth the money. So that's one of the projects I'll be doing. The other one is I do a lot of random encounter tables. Not so much tables, as that's the problem, I think, is that some of the books include tables, but mine are more detailed. They go into not only a table entry, but a description of it. They come with maps. They come with new creature types. And I have several of those that will be coming out for forests and deserts and jungles, and all of those will probably have some custom art. There is a big campaign. Some of you may have seen, like on DM's Guild, they have third-party campaign books. I think Call of the Deep is one that's very popular, and this is a full, you know, level 1 to level 10, 12, 15, whatever. I have one coming out called Everstorm, and it is a campaign we play-tested and built a couple of years ago, and so I know it from start to finish. I have all the notes. I have a lot of the writing done. I just need to kind of put it in something that is publishable and get that out, and that itself will have some cool art in it. I have a couple of sequels to some stuff I've written in the Moonsea area of Forgotten Realms, and it is about the Frost Prince's invasion of the area on the glacier that sits there. And since this Feywild stuff is out right now, that'll be coming out soon to kind of tag along with that. I got a supplement coming on the Yonti snake people about a different way to use them. I never really thought, if everybody's familiar with the Yonti, they go through rituals and they kind of make themselves more snake-like. But the way the books describe it, it doesn't really make any sense to me. The human will become part Yonti, which will get some like snake features. And then they'll do another ritual. And then instead of having arms, now they'll have snakes for arms, which I just don't see the benefit of that. Why would somebody drop their opposable thumb and hand grips to have two extra snake heads? So I have another way to do this that actually lets them evolve into different forms, that each form has more power or more efficiency or more capability, so that they are actually going to try to achieve some apex final form. And I have a book about how you could run Yonti that way. So everything kind of like, oh, okay, I see. I can see why I would give up, you know, that for this, and all those make sense. And then my winter stuff for this year is called Gnolls versus Gnomes, or Gnomes versus Gnolls. I haven't decided on that. And it is Frost Gnomes versus Winter Gnolls. And these are gnolls that don't come from the Abyss or wherever they come from in the lore. These come from Stygia, which is a plane on the Nine Hells. And the Frost Gnomes are their natural enemy, and they just kind of fight in the snowy mountains. And this will hopefully be a comedic thing. It'll be my first thing that's meant to be funny. They'll kind of have like a Rube Goldberg type of devices to fight these gnolls with. And I'm trying to make it so that the party can play either side. You can either play on the Frost Gnomes side, or you can play on the Winter Gnolls side. And that'll kind of have a Christmassy kind of feel to it.
That sounds really fun.
I hope so.
Hey, entrepreneurs. I love introducing you to new creators every episode, but I could really use your support. I would love to invite you to join our Patreon page, where you'll gain access to behind-the-scenes content, add your questions to upcoming interviews, and you could even receive a shout-out on our site in an upcoming episode. To learn more, go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. And now, back to the show. I am so curious right now because, you know, as you've said earlier in this conversation, you are leading a company, you've got a newborn, and you are producing so many things. How are you balancing your time? Like, how are you finding the time to work on all of this?
Well, time is finite. So if you can imagine how much time I've been putting in this, you can see how little time I've been putting into my actual business. But that being said, my actual business is in the event industry, and the event industry took a hard hit with this whole pandemic. So there actually hasn't been a lot of work to do in that. Most places canceled their events. A lot of event centers closed. So really, it's, I guess, thanks to the pandemic, even though I don't want to put it that way, that I've had the time to really do things. And like I said, I took about a year off during the pandemic as well. So it's mostly once I kind of gathered myself together after that, I've been able to use that time to now put into this. And my hope is that this will become my full-time main source of income eventually, even though I know that's a very difficult thing to achieve. But that's why I have my OneNote stuff written up, why I have my processes. I have all these things that I've been saying. I actually have a list I was reading it off of because I've already been trying to iteratively make the process more efficient. Every time, and maybe that's something I should have mentioned on my process, at the very end of a project, I go back through my list of how to make a or how to make a publication, and I refine it with things that I learned through that one. So every time my list gets more concise and more efficient and more specific, and I'm hoping that I can, you know, be at the release per week state without sacrificing quality. I don't want to put, you know, bad stuff out that'll make me look bad. But I think that, you know, eventually you have people, you have editors and you have artists and stuff. Once you're a big company or at least a small company that has multiple employees, for me, that's mostly just myself. So, but once I actually can expand and have other people working with me regularly as a team, I hope that my process development here is good enough that I can easily just hand them sections and go, okay, here's what you got to do. I already have it all lined out. And then they can tweak that and make it work for them. But that's pretty much how the time goes. I haven't actually released much in the last month, and that's due to the newborn. Sleep deprivation is real. But prior to that, I had about maybe a week and a half per release, and it was selling pretty well, and people were liking it. So I think I was kind of getting close to something that will work. But really, that's the secret, I think, at least for me, is like it's ultra efficient, ultra planned out. Like I like to know what my steps are. And again, I have a huge bucket of projects that I could do just because my imagination is so overactive. I fill it faster than I can empty it. So I think I have material for years and years.
So a week and a half from beginning to publication is about how long it was taking you?
Yes.
My gosh. That is really impressive.
It's pretty fast. And I probably will get people telling me it's too fast. Like maybe I can do more quality reviews and more, editing revisions or something. But I think it was, you know, pretty good as far as time management goes. You know, they say you can do extra revisions, but you're only going to get 0.5% each time after a certain amount. So I think I got a pretty good, solid product. And again, the reviews have been good. People have been really enjoying them. And for me, it's good because I think it's Stephen King that says, if you're going to write a book, you need to write it in 30 days. Otherwise, what's the point? And I think him saying that, obviously, he's probably a better writer than everybody, one. But I think his meaning in that is that if 30 days you've been saturating yourself with the story, you're going to want to focus on something else after 30 days. Your passion is going to be gone. You've tried to carry it out longer than you're interested in it. So the faster you can get it done, the more concise time with real boundaries that keep you, or like, this is super interesting to me, so I'm going to write it. If you can keep the writing it during that portion of time, I think you end up with a better quality product just because, you know, people can tell that you were passionate about something when you write it as opposed to, you know, zombie dredging through it and, oh, I got to finish this. I started it 6 months ago and I don't even care about it anymore. So I think the quick iterative process is really helpful to keep all that energy right where it needs to be.
I think that's really good advice. And honestly, I'm a project manager and you are so speaking to like my heart right now. I'm curious, and I appreciate that earlier you mentioned your kind of marketing plan, but what I want to know is, I guess more specifically, especially knowing now that your turnaround time tends to be a week and a half, how much time are you devoting to marketing each different product? When do you start that process? Kind of how often are you talking about it again after the initial kind of launch?
I like to preface this with the fact that I'm not good at this. So what I'm going to say is what I do, though I recognize it is not the greatest thing to do. So I usually mention something a couple times before it's done. Not often because I'm too busy writing it. I just don't have the, you know, the focus. If I switch focuses, I'll lose my momentum. Right now, I mention it a couple times before I'm done. Usually, it's a screenshot or something. It's a real visual world with the Instagram and Twitter and TikTok and stuff like that. So writing is hard to share with people as you do it to build that hype. So I'm trying to do things like take pictures of a word processor or take a picture of a map or maybe an item that I've done. So a couple of those before it's released. Once it's released, I spend one solid day, pretty much, we'll call it 6 hours. And that is posting on all the various forums. There's, you know, RPG forums, Reddit. There's some Discords, maybe 6-7 Discords. There's Twitter. I don't even use Instagram. I started kind of putting some content on there, but I haven't really connected with anybody yet. I just kind of put some base content on there. So when I do start using it, it doesn't look like I'm brand new. I don't use TikTok. But basically, it's that 6-hour day. I put it everywhere I can, and then I start talking about it to people. I share it. I try to find some reviewers who will review it. I may start getting some streams going or something where somebody can play it, because, you know, all these things that are visual that really help people see things, get them interested. And then it kind of tapers from there. So that's that 6-hour chunk. And as a person who's mostly interested in the stories and the lore, I want to go back and start the next thing. So my tapering is substantial. So maybe it's 6 hours that day, and then maybe 2 hours the next day, and then an hour, and then 30 minutes. And then by the time a week's come along, I should be talking about it more, but I've pretty much moved on at that point.
Okay. I still, like, that's honestly a lot more than what a lot of people do. And so I think that that's really cool.
Yeah.
I do want to ensure that we are able to spend some time going over a question that I like to ask on all of my interviews. And the reason that I like to ask this question is because I want to kind of help people see the full spectrum of everything. Because we focus a lot on, well, this is how I'm doing things, and this is what's really been working, and it's been really cool. But I also want to acknowledge that there are challenges in doing projects and writing so many things and getting those publications out there. So when you look back over the last couple of years since you started writing and publishing out on DMs Guild, what would you say has been the most challenging part?
Imposter syndrome is probably the largest thing. And maintaining focus is the second. I'll actually talk about them in reverse. So the biggest thing, and I think this is part of what writer's block is, it's part of what there's a lot of different names for it. But the biggest hurdle is not knowing what to do right now. And when you're looking at it from a high level, there is so much to do. I mean, you're going to getting ready to create a world here, or a story, or multiple intersecting lives that are coming together out of conflict that has to remain interesting to an audience of diverse people from young ages to old ages in various parts of the world. And you have to somehow take that tangled mess and comb it long enough to get some sinew that is able to, you know, sing the right song. And that's quite difficult. And during the pandemic, I actually read a lot of books, and I knew that my focus was just generally bad, mostly from burnout. And to sum up, I can sum up about 7 self-development books right now in just a few steps. And that is, one, you have to maintain your vision of what you want. And I know that I want to be able to do this well and do this continuously. And two, you need to take steps to get there, right? You can't be stagnant and expect to get anywhere. So, but, you know, what's the step you need to take? And I've determined now that it doesn't matter really what the step you need to take is. It's just a baby step. Whatever it is, you just take one of them. And then when you're done with that, you take another one. So my focus problem has been at least managed by my process outline I have. And if I have like a writer's block or I can't focus on one thing, I'll just move to something else on the list that I can. So at least I'm putting effort into a finished product and it's not getting wasted. But focus is definitely one of the big challenges. And as for the other one, it's the imposter syndrome. It's like, who am I to say that these adventures are going to be good, that these stories I want to tell are going to be interesting? You know, they're going to read this and they're going to know for a, you know, within a minute that I'm a fake, that nothing I write is original. I don't use enough adverbs. I don't use enough adjectives. I have passive voice when I shouldn't. you know, you're certain that those things will be spotlighted by every individual that reads your stuff. And, you know, that day you have a dip in sales or a bad review or a non-reaction where you expected one, those, you know, just magnify and kind of, you know, prove to yourself that, oh yeah, see, I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it. I knew that I'm not really that person. But again, from those books I read, that's the one that you hear often is ignore the naysayers, and you yourself can be a naysayer. So I mostly just try to remember it's part of the process. Everybody has it. Ignore it and do another baby step toward whatever project I'm working on. And that's pretty much how I've managed that one.
I think that is wonderful advice. Imposter syndrome does tend to hit everyone. And so it's just something that you got to remember that everyone feels that way at some point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm positive when you're done here, you'll edit out 99% of what I said, because I think it's all the wrong stuff.
I just want you to know, I am loving this conversation.
Well, great.
Also, like I said, I'm a project manager, and I was just eating up like your entire process and how detailed it was. It was awesome.
Great. I'm glad somebody appreciates that.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I want to then flip that question around and say that when you look back over the last couple of years of working all of this and growing your inventory of supplements and adventures, what would you say has been the most rewarding part of this journey?
I'll say two things. One, like I said, I got some awards, some best-selling awards, or I won a contest from MT's Black has like a compilation. I didn't win the contest. I won like a category. And that was something early I did, you know, early on I did that. So that really gave me some armor against the imposter syndrome stuff is that category award that I got. And then the best selling, you know, if your item gets to a certain, you know, level of sales where it's not just two or three people, but it's hundreds of people. I mean, I can look at some download reports of the different things that I've sold. And I've calculated it out. There's, you know, 15, 20,000 people in the world that are at games using material that I came up with on my home computer from my own mind. And that, and when I remind myself of that, it really helps me, you know, feel like maybe I'm not an imposter. Maybe I can do this, and I should get better over time as we all do. And, you know, I have not achieved that 10,000 hours of mastery yet, but, you know, I'll be closer to there. One more baby step every time I do something. And so just seeing some of those confirmations has been a really, really nice thing. The second one, since I have friends locally who are in the, you know, tabletop gaming community, it's kind of nice for them to, you know, they don't know how successful I am or not. They just know I write content and my name's on stuff. And to see them, you know, think of me as a person in the industry, even though it's a sliver, it feels nice to have that kind of like recognition. Like, you know, I've put in a drop in this ocean called D&D or whatever RPG you're writing with. And, you know, from that point on, I've kind of made that world a little bit bigger.
That is really fun. I mean, congratulations. Like, that is really cool to be able to look back and say that you've had an impact on that many people in that many games.
Yes, thank you.
So as we're kind of winding down, I know that we are recording this very early in regards to when it's going to actually release. But I do kind of want to know, looking through the rest of this year, are there any specific upcoming projects that you're really excited about that we haven't necessarily talked about?
So for the rest of this year, yeah, I think I've mentioned most of them, though, is my Frost Gnomes and Winter Gnolls. That's going to be hopefully done to be used around Christmas or at least around December. So that will probably be kind of being hyped around that time. And again, that Feywild sequel to my pretty successful starter campaign should be out. Both those should be, I hope, done. Well, one of them hopefully will be done by then, and the other one should be in process. And I just finished a trilogy for the Yanti stuff in Saltmarsh, and I'm going to be packaging that up as a big bundle of all this content. And that'll probably be the largest collective thing I've ever done. It'll probably be, you know, several hundred pages of stuff, and that should be coming out, and I'm sure that will be out by then. I'm not sure anything else for the rest of the year. Some little stuff, some of those random encounters, there should be lots of those. I focus too much on making things big, and although I like it, it is not necessarily what people desire. They like concise and easy to read. So I'm going to try to focus on lots of little things for a little bit and get them off my plate. And those are mostly going to be random encounter tables and subclasses and stuff like that.
Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I'll definitely be keeping an eye out for those as the year progresses. And Chris, thank you so much for coming on today. Where can people find you?
By the time this is out, I have my actual website, which is cryptwrite.com. And that will be actually administered by me. And that will go everywhere and have far more detailed stuff, perhaps a blog and things like that. Other than that, I'm on Twitter at the same name, Cryptwrite. And I talk on there more than I should. Mostly bad jokes that people don't get.
Perfect. I'll have links to all those in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a really cool conversation. And I'm really happy to hear all about your processes and just all of the thought that goes into everything that you're publishing.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate you having me. I'm not really a talker, so this is probably more words I've said than the last 7 days combined.
Well, thank you for blessing me with your words.
Yeah, no problem.
You just finished another episode of Role, Play, Grow. To check out the show notes from today's episode, you can go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. To keep up with every episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice. And if you're enjoying the show, I would absolutely love if you would leave me a review and share this episode with your friends. Your review might even get featured on an upcoming episode. To follow me on Twitter, you can either find me at LightheartADV for our business account, or at KetraWCR for tweets on gaming, my dog Bowser, and other random shenanigans. You can also find us as Lightheart Adventures on both Instagram and Patreon. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time on Role, Play, Grow.